1, 2, 3.
You're listening to Sports Talk Chicago with your host, John Zagluhl.
John, I am fantastic. Thank you for having me. You got an awesome voice, man, and that was a terrific intro. You're like a pro's pro.
You know, that was the first time somebody ever said that, John. No, you're the first person to ever say anything like that. That's very interesting.
You got it, John. Anything for a fellow Chicago guy.
Well, what a great question.
That's a great question. Nobody's actually asked me that.
I like it. What a great question. I never heard that before.
Chase Utley is what? You're saying he's not a Hall of Fame candidate?
You know, it's funny. You may be the only person that I've heard make that connection.
Thank you, John, for having me. I'm doing great. By the way, you have an outstanding voice. Not sure about your face because I haven't met you, but your voice is great.
You're doing a much better job than I ever did. You've had some heavy hitters guests on too, man, so keep up the good work. But it's good to be with you, and I'm ready to talk sports.
Hello, everybody, and welcome into Sports Talk Chicago. My name's John Zagluhl. Great to have you here. On today's edition of the program, the Cubs are rolling. We'll explain in just a moment. Plus, a brand new interview today with Phil Rogers, a Forbes sports writer and former Chicago Tribune sports writer. Talk with him about the Cubs' success and their rebuild from July, what to expect for their future, and so much more. It's a great interview, and it comes your way near the midway point of this show. Remember, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at John Z Sports and on Facebook at John Zagluhl. And if you want to listen to this show at any time in podcast form, search up Sports Talk Chicago on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, and sportstalkchicago.com. Before we start today, I have to tell you about State Farm agent Ryan McDevitt. A lot of our listeners have gone to him for all their insurance needs. He's been very helpful in getting them the coverage they deserve. There's no game with Brian. He's just here to help and make sure you feel safe. So if you have insurance needs and you haven't called him yet, what are you waiting for? Dial up the number, 630-796-2662. That's 630-796-2662. Or find him online at ryanismyagent.com. That's ryanismyagent.com, and make sure to mention Sports Talk Chicago. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. I want to start today with this. How do you perform with no expectations? What do you do when people expect nothing out of you? It's like when you're the last kid picked for a football game and you score a touchdown, right? On the playground. Everyone's in shock, like, I didn't know you could do that. Yeah, I'm capable. Give me a shot. I have nothing to lose. There's also a difference between no expectations and high expectations and pressing. Think about the Cubs back in May, June, July. High expectations, decent players, they were pressing. Couldn't perform, couldn't hit the baseball, couldn't pitch. And as we all know, fire set. Everyone traded, new team, rebuild, everyone's gone. I don't know, it seemed like those guys couldn't rise up to the occasion. Couldn't anymore, at least. I mean, yes, they won the World Series in 2016, but what have they done since then? A whole lot of nothing. All those players from the 2016 team, what have they done in baseball since winning the World Series? Nothing. Got complacent. Couldn't stay consistent, and then caved in when pressure mounted. They pressed. At the end of the day, I think everybody was happy to see him go. I know the nostalgia value is still there, but from a baseball perspective, from an X's and O's perspective, everybody was happy to see the Cubs move on. Now when you watch the Cubs, when you turn them on, you probably can't recognize the roster they have. Probably thinking, who the hell is Rafael Ortega? Who the hell is Frank Schwindel? Patrick Wisdom, never heard of him. But believe it or not, to their credit, they're performing. Patrick Wisdom leads the team in home runs with 25. Frank Schwindel, 34 games, 10 homers, 30 RBIs. Rafael Ortega, 838 OPS, 293 batting average, 82 games. How do you explain this? All of these random journeymen. When the Cubs already said, we are not going to contend, They're performing, and they're winning. The Cubs just won 7 games in a row. The Cubs, the same team with Rizzo, Bryant, and Baez, who lost 12 straight back in July. Now they're winning 7 in a row with Patrick Wisdom, Rafael Ortega, a resurgence for me and Hap, and Frank Schwindel. The pitching still isn't there. Winning all these games. How the hell is that possible? It's because no one cares anymore. There are no expectations for this team. I'm surprised people even watch Cubs baseball still. So these players, a lot of them, on one-year deals, trying to fight for their careers, have said, you know what? We got to play our ass off if we want to stay in baseball. And they are. Now, I know a lot of people who say, I like college sports more than professional. It's a popular opinion. When I ask why, they always say they are not playing under a bloated contract. They are literally fighting for their careers. Same thing here with the Cubs. And you have to respect it. You may not be happy about the way things went down in July and August, but you have to admit, this ragtag group is winning baseball games. I can't explain it. I don't know how some of these guys are performing, but I do know this. There are no expectations, and they're fighting for their careers. All these guys are old. Patrick Wisdom's a 29-year-old rookie. Same with Frank Schwindel. Ortega's 30, and he's played, what, 20 games in baseball before? All of these guys are finally getting their opportunities, and there are no expectations whatsoever. They're just being told, play. See what you can do. We're not contending. There's no pennant race, so it's up to you to make of it what you want. And to their credit, they have. I really want all these guys back next year. Seriously. Out of the one-year deals, bring them back. I'm not saying Cubs fans should be happy with this roster, but to their credit, they're making it entertaining despite trading away all their superstars. Frank Schwindel has a higher WAR this year than Anthony Rizzo. Yeah. Frank Schwindel, who's played 34 games, has a higher WAR than Anthony Rizzo, played in 92. I know everybody said, oh, don't bash the Cubs core. They won a World Series. They just couldn't perform. No, I'm going to bash the Cubs core. How is that even possible? How is a 29-year-old rookie journeyman have a better WAR than Anthony Rizzo? This goes to show you that this core, the old core, couldn't perform. It was over. I think right now you're seeing it too. A lot of people were, of course, very resistant to the changes made by the Ricketts, by Jed Hoyer. But all of you are realizing today that all these players were being paid literally league minimum, are putting up better numbers than the core. They are. Let's see, what do I want? 15 walks and 131 strikeouts in Javier Baez or Patrick Wisdom. Do I want 248 and a 792 OPS from Rizzo or Frank Schwindel hitting 340? I'm just saying. When there are no expectations, you surprise everybody, no matter what. Frank Schwindel could have hit 250 with 8 homers in 40, 50 games, and everybody would have been impressed. What he's doing now is actually historic to an extent. One of the best runs I've ever seen in a Cubs uniform from anybody. And this guy was DFA'd from Oakland. Just DFA'd. Cubs picked him up. Crazy what happens when people expect the worst. Like if you're a kid on a playground and you're picked, you're the last kid picked to a baseball team. And you come up to bat, everyone's saying, oh, he's the worst hitter. Bring him in, right? Calling everybody in, everybody in. Then you hit a home run. You walk around the bases and tell everybody to shove it. Same idea. Everybody told the Cubs, hey, bring it in. These guys suck now. And they turn around with zero expectations, nothing to play for, nothing to lose, and they're winning baseball games. I love it. And I love the fact that they're still entertaining despite making the right business decisions. That's what I'm very psyched about. Everybody can say what they want. The decisions they made were correct. You may not want to rebuild, but the fact of the matter is, the core wasn't performing. Got to move on. They did. Now they're still winning games. They're winning games. Patrick Wisdom, Frank Schwindel, Rafael Ortega. I don't know. If I were a Cubs fan, I'd be pretty happy with where this team is right now. Because if they're winning with this roster, imagine what happens when the rebuild is over. Imagine what happens when I go and spend money again. When they develop more of their top prospects. Imagine where this team's going to be. They're winning 7 in a row with this roster. You got to be kidding me. I see the lineups they're putting out every night. The ones they put on social media. I'm like, who the hell are these guys? They're winning. This is really the best case scenario if you're a Cubs fan. Sure, you may not be the Chicago White Sox. You might have lost supremacy in the city, but I'll say this much. You're rebuilding for the future. In 4 or 5 years, you will be a World Series contender, number one. Number two, until then, it may not be as painful as people thought. Maybe this won't be 2012, 2013, 100 losses. And if you could field a competitive team with these guys, save payroll, develop prospects, you're doing it right. You are doing it right. I'm not saying any of these performances are sustainable. Swindell's 29, Ortega's 30, and Wisdom's 29. These are all rookies, too, essentially. I'm not saying this will continue next year. I'm not saying these guys are going to become superstars. But if it does happen that way, or at least if they can maintain this production, you could field a 500 team during a rebuild. Then turn around in 3 or 4 years, have your prospects make some signings, and be great again. I know Cubs fans didn't want a rebuild, but I'll say this. What you have today is not bad. The team's still competing. They make every game interesting. Got rid of the core and floated possible contracts in the future. Save money. Develop guys who you know are going to be great in the future. You're still playing okay baseball. It won't be 2012 either. Don't have to worry about a 100 loss season. Don't have to worry about horrible years, forgettable years. Joe Mather playing right field. No. This has the potential to be a retool, not a rebuild, if things go according to plan. If I were a Cubs fan, I'd be stoked. No watching 100 losses. No worrying about dark years ahead. Instead, we'll wait a couple of years. Maybe we won't contend, but we'll play competitive baseball. And when we're ready, we're back to the top. I would actually argue the Cubs right now are the most surprising team in baseball. Tell me I'm wrong. You get rid of 3 guys who brought you a World Series, then you go on a 7-game winning streak. Your quote-unquote superstars couldn't do anything, so you got rid of them. They get a ragtag bunch of guys, 3 rookies, who are nearly 30 years old. You win 7 straight. That, to me, pretty damn surprising. And if they're winning today, with this roster, what do you think happens when they complete the rebuild, or the retool? They have Ed Howard called up. Greg Dykeman going to be back. What do you think happens when all these guys come up from the minors? Go and sign a couple of guys. I'm really excited for this team and where they're going. Not many people are willing to say that, but I will. What's the problem here? They're 64-76. Not horrible, considering you got rid of your top 3 superstars. Not horrible. Hey, the Pythagorean win-loss should be 60-80. They're 64-76. They won 4 more games than they should have. They're hitting home runs, too. Homered in their 14th consecutive game, the longest active streak in the National League. This team's playing decent baseball. Without Rizzo and Baez and Bryant. By the way, if you go look up their numbers, not too good. And their new locations. I really think the Cubs are moving in the right direction. Everybody wants to blame the Ricketts family. They're not spending on payroll. Hey, that may not be the best thing in the world, yes, but I'm very happy this roster's performing. They will spend on payroll when the time is right, in my opinion. I think they will. And if this team's winning now, what will happen in a couple of years with real players? All these guys are journeymen. They're getting their one shot and making the most of it. Can you imagine what happens to the Cubs when they have a real rotation? Imagine if they had a real rotation today. I think they'd be a 500 team, even with this roster. Not bad to me. Not bad at all. It's a matter of how you want to look at it. You could still be pessimistic. Oh, the Cubs got rid of their superstars. They're rebuilding. I'm not watching. I don't care. Or you could say, well, the superstars weren't performing. And the team they have today, although I don't recognize anybody on it, they're winning. So what do you think happens when they actually become good again? You have nothing to lose. Nothing to lose right now. Just imagine, too, when Jason Hayward's contract is off the books. When Yu Darvish's contract is off the books, because they're still paying him right now. Imagine when they have all this money to spend again. And meanwhile, well, they should be losing and on pace for 100 losses. They're not. Remember, everybody said, oh, this team's going to 90 losses now after the trade. Well, they're not. They're not. They're not on pace to. If they stay at this pace, they might go like 76 and 86. To me, not bad. Really not bad at all, considering. I love the direction of this team. I really think they're doing this the right way. May not look good today. Cubs fans may cower and say, oh my goodness, 64 and 76. Well, if you're a real Cubs fan, you know that the Cubs have never really been good. This is not the worst the Cubs have been. I saw an article last week. Is this the worst Cubs run, worst Cubs team ever? No, it's not. Not even close. Just won 7 straight games. Not every Cubs team has done that. 2012 Cubs didn't do it. Cubs in the 80s didn't do it. The Cubs had a college of coaches system in the 60s. They didn't win 7 straight games. You know what they did at that time, just so you know? They had different coaches from their minor league team come to the majors and all rotated as manager. I don't know. To me, that'd be the worst Cubs team. They didn't even have a freaking manager around that time. They couldn't win. This team is winning 7 straight games. Keep that in mind. Don't let the recency bias put you aside. Don't be thinking, well, if they're not winning a World Series, that means they suck and they're the worst team ever. No, they're not. If you know your Cubs history, you'd realize this team really isn't that bad. And the fact that they're doing this with all these nobodies, essentially, is outstanding. I'm extremely excited for this team's future. I called for the rebuild for years. It's happening. But look at this. I didn't expect this. I didn't expect a rebuild in which they'd essentially play 500 baseball. I didn't expect a rebuild in which the team would win 7 straight games. I didn't expect a rebuild where 3 rookies, well, near the age of 30, would be playing at superstar levels. That's not the rebuild I saw in 2012, 2013. Which means I don't think it's going to last too long. I really do believe that maybe in 2 or 3 years, they're going to be back. Think about this logically. If they're winning today, what do you think is going to happen when they develop everybody and sign some people? They've won 7 straight with no money invested. They got rid of everybody. No money. Everybody should be extremely encouraged by what they're doing today. And if you're not, if you still have sour grapes over them getting rid of Baez, Bryant, and Rizzo, you need to move on then. Frank Schwindel has a higher WAR today than Anthony Rizzo. It's time to realize that those guys were great, but it's over. It's beyond over. Look towards the future. Build a new core that's going to win you more World Series than just one. And they're starting on the right way today. With this roster, with little money invested, they're winning. I can't wait to see what happens when everybody develops, when they have money to be a contender again. More to come here on Sports Talk Chicago. My interview with Phil Rogers comes up next, so stay tuned. Talk Chicago. Everett John Zagluel, and we are back and ready for today's special guest. He's a Forbes sports writer, BBWAA member, and a best-selling author. Please welcome Phil Rogers to the program. Phil, it's great to have you on. How are you?
Thanks very much, John. Doing well.
So, Phil, let me ask you this to start. Have you ever booed a reader of your work?
No, I never have, but I've certainly been booed by a lot of readers, and I've learned the value of thick skin through the years, for sure.
What do you think would happen if you did that?
Well, he'd be more likely to just tune me out and stop reading. I mean, I'm sure back in the old days when you got more than 140 characters and it was email, I had some exchanges, and when people would get angry, I would pretty much just go with, thanks for reading me, and I think we agree to disagree, but thanks for reading me. And let it go at that. And, I think people appreciated the fact that I would let them vent, and they could call me an idiot. I wouldn't feel the need to call them an idiot in return.
How do you think this all applies then to the Baez and Lindor situation in New York? What was your reaction when you saw what they did?
Yeah, I guess I see it both ways. My initial reaction, knowing New York City fans, is just how stupid it is, and how in my opinion we're in an era where athletes athletes patronize fans. Every team, every city, the people say, oh, that our fans are the best fans, this is the best city. A lot of times the media and the fans patronize the players while they're there. Oh, you're the greatest. And then as soon as they're out of town, people start telling bad stories about, I always knew this and this, but they never said it, when the guy was in their market. And it's not really respect to me. It's a period of patronization, and it kind of goes both sides. And so it's surprising, when people are so openly non-patronizing, and it's far worse when it's a new guy, Javier Baez in New York, guy who just got there, versus somebody who's lived through some real stuff. So I thought it was really silly on his part. On the other side, it wasn't the middle finger those guys gave fans. It was the turn down thumb. And, I think there's different degrees of reaction and outrage, and I was glad it was the turn down thumb, not the upturned middle finger.
Did they deserve the boo, Phil, based on their performance?
Probably, and it really starts, if you look at the whole team, with Lindor getting off to the bad start after signing the $300+ million contract. I'll say I do fantasy baseball and have for probably about 10 years. I was kind of a late adopter to it, but I enjoy it now. And one thing that when I'm drafting teams and thinking about them, that first year after a player changes and goes to a new team in free agency, more often than not, there's a little difficulty and drama and adjustment to it. And the guy's better in the second year. But, I think the Mets, when you look at the DeGrom injury, you look at them not having had Syndergaard as well. Then Lindor gets off to a bad start. I mean, it's just a lot of recipes for disappointment for this fan base that thought, oh, this is our year. We're going to be better than the Yankees. We're going to take over New York. And it hasn't happened. So I understand why the fans are disappointed. And given that it's the athlete's job to produce, I would say they probably have deserved it. Javi Baez is having an absolutely miserable season that he covers up by the fact he hits home runs. To me, he's gone from being this multi-talented guy that had all the potential in the world to he's kind of a modern version of Juan Uribe. You know, Juan Uribe was a good fielder. He hit home runs, but he struck out a lot and he never walked. I mean, the strikeout walk ratio for Javier Baez is, in one word, disgraceful. He's gotten, you know, he's gotten into terribly bad habits as his career's gone on. And people like Jim Hendry, who was the Cubs GM when he drafted him, and I think Theo Epstein, when he got to know him early in his tenure, you know, would be really disappointed by his development as a player because he had the potential to be so much more, but he got caught up into the big plays and the long ball.
You know, I'm surprised, and I saw this stat the other day, Phil. In the past 162 games for Baez, it's something like 200-plus strikeouts and only 20-plus walks. I mean, that's not sustainable to be a Major League Baseball player.
No, it isn't. And, you know, you see there was that, I don't know if it would be proper to call it a meme, but this video that went around a week ago of Javi swinging and missing, and literally he couldn't have hit this pitch with a canoe paddle. You know, I mean, missed so badly that it became a thing. And it's not the way you see professional big league ball players swing at the ball. And, you know, he's had, you know, I don't know, with the Cubs, he had a different hitting coach every year. That couldn't have been good for him. But he's had some smart people around him, I'm sure. And he's just gotten caught up in, you know, instead of having a lot of games where you contribute little things, I think every game he goes into, he wants to be the star of the game. And it's a selfish approach, and unsustainable is the right word. And I will be very surprised if he doesn't get a harsh wake-up call when he hits free agency after the season. And it will have more to do with his performance than the thumbs down to the Mets fans. You know, I he's a guy that I think always expected $200 to $300 million. You know, I think when Lindor got the deal a year ago, I think he thought, well, I can get a Lindor contract, but he hasn't performed and produced in the way that would make any team that eager to go out and make super big long-term commitments to him. So, you know, he could be a one-year free agent guy that has to go out and reestablish himself with a good 2022 season, since 2021 is getting to the end and he's disappointed so badly.
How do you think he corrects these issues? I mean, I suggested back when he was with the Cubs with this strikeout-to-walk ratio that he should be demoted straight up, and a couple of people chided me and said, well, his WAR is high, he contributes defensively, he runs the bases well. What do you think he could do to become who he was before, be better than he is today?
You know, I think it just takes a lot more self-awareness than he has and that he has shown. And, you know, I don't know if it's getting a new voice around him that he will listen to that would help him. But, you know, I think he's going to, as all free agent players are this winter, he's going to be judged by the market. And, you know, he wouldn't be the first guy who, you know, thought, you know, everything about himself was great until he got judged by other people and then finds out, well, I've got to have to make some changes. If so, he's young enough to make changes and go back and use that potential. But I'm like you. I would point out in the Chicago Tribune from time to time or on blogs that when I was with MLB.com, you know, the Cubs were their best when Javi Baez was the second baseman and Addison Russell was the shortstop. And unfortunately for Addison Russell, he's had a short career due to his off-the-field issues. But, you know, people all just wanted to think, well, now Javi's a shortstop. He's destined to be the shortstop. Of course, you know, they got to get rid of Addison Russell and move on. And, you know, it was kind of like it was just, inevitable that he was going to be this Hall of Fame level shortstop because he made some nice tags. I mean, his great plays are terrific. His base running instincts, and defensively, you know, some of the things he does, not other players do, but the other players that don't do those things make the routine players plays better, and pretty much always did. And, you know, I think he's just going to have to look at himself honestly and say, I got to go out and work to not make so many errors. And, you know, in the biggest thing, I've got to change my approach at the plate and go back to working counts a little bit, hitting the ball. I mean, he's a lot like Sammy Sosa in terms of approach at the plate. And I only saw one guy that ever really got through to Sammy, and that was Don Baylor. And there was a short period of time after Sammy's MVP season in 98 when I think he actually was at his best. He was hitting balls to the opposite field. He was using the whole park, and he was running the bases hard. He was playing a better outfield. He had become a really good all-around player. And then he got back into the stuff with Barry Bonds, where they were huge rivals. And again, it was all about just hitting the home runs. And I think we saw the tail end of his career be disappointing and probably briefer than people thought it would be. And, you know, I see Javi heading to that same place if he doesn't, make a lasting change when he sits down and looks at his 2021 season in production. And you're right to point out that it's not that it came out of nowhere this year. You know, he was, I would say, pretty much every year he was in Chicago, he was not as good of a player as he was the year before. And, you know, even though he's in an age where he should be moving into his prime years, it was just a disappointment kind of year after year. And it slid because Chicago fans loved him and he wasn't held fully accountable for some of the regression. You know, I think this regression bears some responsibility to why the Cubs fell off after 2017. But I don't think he personally was really held accountable. And I think all of that is landing at his feet now.
Bill Rogers here on Sports Talk Chicago. Bill, let's talk about that Cubs team. How surprising is their collapse today?
It's shocking. I mean, you can't quantify it or qualify it. And, you know, I guess I was like everybody else. I got kind of fooled by the Ricketts commitment. There's no logical reason why, you know, they had to stop spending money on payroll. I mean, it's true that they did not get the best results from Theo Epstein's supersized baseball department. They invested a lot in front office salaries and failed to produce in drafts and in international signings, you know, and they never really got a good tier of prospects coming behind those guys that came up 7 or 8 years ago. And, you know, that led to the shortage. But you always had the ability to spend in free agency. I mean, I am stunned that they allowed all three of those guys to leave in Rizzo, Bryant, and Baez. I think it is unconscionable that they never redid Anthony Rizzo's contract to give him a deal that would have kept him in Chicago long term. You know, and I'm not sure. I certainly didn't sit in on the negotiations. I don't know what Chris Bryant was asking. I don't know what Javi Baez was asking. And I don't know what the Cub doctors said about Anthony Rizzo's back. But Rizzo contributed so much early on in the rebuild of that. And he did so while playing under this team-friendly contract that he never made a public issue of. And it just seemed like he was, to the degree that an athlete making $15 million a year can be taken advantage of, you know, I think the Cubs took advantage of Anthony Rizzo, and that's really disappointing to me.
Who's to blame for their current position today?
Well, you know, I think it's mostly the lack of financial commitment from ownership and this feeling that you have to regain in the short run. You know, they're kind of, to me, hiding behind the pandemic and the those games played without fans in the stands. The way I looked at it going back 15 months or however far we have to go to get to the start of this period of time for professional sports, you know, the Ricketts had built up Wrigley Field. They have all the investment vehicles or revenue-producing vehicles there around Wrigley Field. I would think they would want to keep the team strong to support it. And I just thought, okay, this is going to be a short-term period when owners in baseball, including the Ricketts, have to suck it up, and baseball won't be as great financially for owners during this pandemic until we get past this pandemic. But then, you know, you look at appreciation of franchise values and just how great baseball has been for its owners. You know, they're just in a period where they either have to take losses or profits not as great, depending on who you talk to, or this rough period. And then you get past it and get back to business as usual. Obviously, Tom Ricketts, and I suspect it all starts with his father in Omaha. You know, I think Tom is, it's always been a Ricketts family operation, and Tom has been the front man. But I think Joe probably has made the big financial decisions. And it seems to me like without much transparency, the Ricketts have just totally pulled back. And I am hearing from baseball people that this is going to go on for 3 or 4 years, that the Ricketts family has made an economic decision to make money off of the Cubs for 3 or 4 years without seriously investing in the payroll. And that is a bit of a shell game based on what Tom Ricketts always said. And I also think it feels to me like he's kind of gone into a cave and is no longer as visible as he was during the good days when he was always there. And I thought on the front end, when they did the rebuild after hiring Theo Epstein, I thought they were remarkably honest and candid in, you know, telling fans to brace for some painful years, et cetera. But, you know, it just seems to me that all of that has reversed. And, you know, they're going to hand the town to the White Sox, which is really, really remarkable.
What was your reaction when you heard about the fact that they wouldn't invest in this team for 3 to 4 years? I mean, that's pretty shocking for me to hear personally, and I'm sure a lot of people don't know that.
Well, you know, I'll say the same person who I heard that from told me 2 months ago, no matter where the Cubs are in standing, people with the Cubs were telling other teams that they were going to trade Bryant, Baez, and Rizzo. It didn't matter even if they were in first place.
Really?
So the same people that told me that are now saying three to four years of just looking to make money off the team, not worry about fielding a competitive team. And, you know, it's not shocking to me now that I saw what happened with Bryant, Baez, Rizzo, and by my math, I'm not sure enough has been made about this, but by my calculations, if you go back to the winter before this year with Yu Darvish, you look at Kyle Schwarber going off, being non-tendered, that whole group, by the time they got done at the trade deadline, trading 7 or 8 players in July, I had it at about $150 million off the payroll for 15 players in 8 or 9 months. I mean, that is epic. And so by the time I got to the end of July and saw that, you know, the next piece doesn't really shock me, the 3 to 4 years, you know, clearly the whole thing is turned on its head, and all of a sudden the Ricketts have become, you know, the Wrigley family selling the entertainment of Wrigley Field and all that without worrying about, the competitiveness of the team. It's kind of back to the sad days of, you know, but I was going to say the sad days of Ernie Banks, Billy Williams, Ron Santo, but at least then there were star players. There just wasn't enough commitment around them to, you know, to build a fully winning team, but at least they had some name value guys to go out and watch.
When do you think they'll be good again then?
I don't have the imagination. You know, they got really, you know, they used the draft smartly, but that was Theo Epstein's operation, not Jed Hoyer's. And they've lost a lot of front office brain drain in the last 5 years. And they don't have the commitment from ownership. So I love Nick Madrigal. You know, if I were them, I would sign Nick Madrigal and Wilson Contreras to long-term contracts tomorrow and say, we've got a couple of guys. I think Madrigal is going to win batting titles. And I think if you look at how he started his career, he's historically, he just might be the next Pete Rose. I mean, he's going to be that kind of a player. So I love those two guys, but Wilson's not that far away from leaving. And, you know, Madrigal is not at a stage where he has to be paid much. So it's sort of a different deal, but I don't know if I was teams like the Dodgers and certainly the Cardinals and the Brewers, I would be having a party every day about what's not happening in Chicago.
Bill, let me ask you this. Let's move now to the White Sox. How surprising, how impressive has their season been?
Really impressive. You know, and Jerry Reinsdorf's commitment, you know, I think you can financially question the wisdom of going to get Craig Kimbrel when you already had Liam Hendricks. You know, some of their spending might even be over the top, but you have to give ownership credit for seeing the window and seizing it. And, you know, I go back to after the 2019 season, it wasn't even clear they were going to keep Jose Abreu. If you remember, he filed for free agency. They made him a qualifying offer, but there was a serious thought that another team would scoop in and sign him away. And probably there's, you know, a lot of teams that wish now they had done that, that they had aggressively pursued Jose Abreu because, you know, he is the real stuff. He's everything you want in a ball player, and he keeps driving in runs. And if Sabermetrics devalues RBIs, he does a lot of other things that they value, you know, including being a really tough out at the plate. And he's made himself into a pretty good defensive first baseman, at least an average one. And he's one of the best leaders in baseball. So I can't come up with really a negative about the White Sox. I mean, a lot of their bullpen arms didn't pitch well this year, guys that did pitch well last year. But that is somewhat the cyclical nature of relievers and short sample sizes, guys that come in and face, you know, three guys at a time, and that makes or breaks their months and their seasons. But, you know, I love the La Russa hiring when it was made, and I did not think, you know, Rick Renteria would have been a great unknown as manager of this team because he never managed a team like it. And Tony has managed teams like this since the 1980s. And he, you know, I think he's the exact right guy now to prepare the team as they, you know, get to the playoffs with this big lead in the American League Central. They'll probably clinch mid-September and then spend the rest of the month resting guys, you know, trying to get guys an edge to go into the playoffs. And, you know, La Russa's the exact right guy. That wasn't an easy hire to make, and it was a very unpopular hire with a lot of people. But, you know, I think it was 100% the right move. And, I think we've seen it already, but if not, we'll certainly see it, I think, in October.
How far do you see him going this year?
You know, I think the three best teams in baseball are the Dodgers, the Astros, and the White Sox. So, you know, I think they're no guarantee. You know, you look at all those Atlanta Braves teams that were really, truly complete teams, well-managed, and they won one World Series in a run of 13 division championships. That tells you how fickle October can be. But, you know, I think the championship series should be them versus the Astros. with the winner playing the Dodgers in the World Series. And I think you could flip a coin in all those series and probably project it as well as you could, you know, when we sit down, in a month with all of the final stats and, you know, all the information we'll have. I think you could probably just flip a coin right now and be just as accurate.
More to come with Bill Rogers. In just a moment, stay tuned. Vince Yance, Sports Talk Chicago. Bill Rogers, still here on Sports Talk Chicago. Bill, two more questions before we finish out. First off, the harshest reaction to one of your Twitter opinions was what?
I'm somewhat proud to say that I don't really keep that stuff with me. You know, I do know there's certain persistent critics in Chicago that didn't matter what I said, there was, you know, I was going to get blasted, whether it was, I wasn't 30 years old. I wasn't, for whatever reason, I wasn't one of the cool kids. I don't know exactly why. And, you know, I just never really paid attention to it because, you know, I've written about baseball a long time, and I've been right more often than I've been wrong, for sure. And, you know, I know people in the sport. I've watched a billion games, and I trust my own institutional knowledge, not somebody else's knee-jerk opinion that what I said is wrong. So, you know, honestly, I've tried not to take it too seriously. If I knew the person who was being critical, it was always a little harder on me because then sometimes you can feel it's personal. But honestly, there's no one thing, John.
Bill, before we finish up today, last question. Is it true that you were a backup second baseman and center fielder in high school?
It's 100% true. I'll tell you why I didn't get a little more playing time and run was I was in Denton, Texas, and we had a good baseball program and we had a great baseball coach of the high school team who had seen me play since I was batting leadoff on a team that won the city championship when I was 12.
Wow.
And that was, you know, I do have a patch in my office from when I was a Pee Wee League All-Star at probably age 7 or 8. And it's one of the proudest things I've held on to through the years. I started off with a future in the game, but not a lot of tools. And then Texas being a football mad state, I did not play football, and we switched. Our really good baseball coach was replaced by a football coach when I got to the high school varsity. And it's fair to say, you know, I wasn't going to beat out the number one running back on our team for playing time. So, you know, I kind of, like a lot of guys, maybe like Theo Epstein, there at Brookline High in Boston, you know, I started watching the game a different way and loving the practices and not having to get validation with the playing time. And, you know, that was, it's a definite link in my lifelong love of baseball, was that little bit of period when I actually got to play the game. I loved every minute I was on a field.
Well, Bill, thank you so much for joining me. Always a pleasure to have you on and talk baseball. Best wishes as the season ramps up here. We get to the postseason. Looking forward to our next conversation. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks, John.
Great talk there with Bill Rogers. And that'll do it for us today here on Sports Talk Chicago. Big thank you to Bill Rogers himself, Matt Dubiel, WCKG, Jim DeTaub, and Tomorrow Entertainment for making this show a success. Remember, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at John Z Sports and on Facebook at John Zagluum. And if you want to listen to this show at any time in podcast form, search up Sports Talk Chicago on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, and SportsTalkChicago.com. Another great show comes your way tomorrow. Thank you so much for listening. Till then, stay safe, and so long, everyone.
No! No! Where are the turtles?